Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Drones are being used on battlefields, both to spy on enemy positions and as lethal weapons, but they're also being used for many other purposes, for commercial aerial photography by hobbyists, to deliver packages and food, and increasingly in law enforcement. Throughout North Carolina, police departments are using drones. Winston-Salem first deployed them for on-scene patrol 7 years ago. Last year, they began their Drones as First Responders program. The Mooresville Police Department has invested in drones that can fly up to 400 feet and reach speeds close to 60 miles an hour. Gastonia's new real-time crime center plans to start their Drones as First Responder program in January. And CMPD is soliciting proposals from drone companies for devices to be used for rapid deployment in emergency situations, surveillance, search and rescue, traffic management, and crime scene monitoring. This technology gives new meaning to the term eye in the sky, and for that reason, they raise privacy concerns as well as concerns about civil liberties. So today we look at the expanding capabilities of drones, their use in policing, the concerns surrounding them, and more. We're joined by Michael Knight. He's a captain in the Criminal Intelligence Bureau for the Winston-Salem Police Department. Jay Stanley is senior project or policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project, and Jeff Welty is a professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Michael, I'm going to begin with you as the captain in the Winston-Salem Police Department. You began using drones, as I said, 7 years ago. Was your department among the first in the state to do so?
I'm not sure about the patrol lead, which is what we started in late 2018 going into 2019. That's where we would just have them respond. We had a very small fleet at that time. So if a critical incident occurred, barricaded subject or high-risk missing person, we would deploy those at that time out of a back of a patrol car. Since then, we've moved last year to the DFR program, which is a little more where I came in. I came in last year right at the beginning of the startup of that. So we actually use drones two different ways now. One is a patrol-based where officers come in and check drones out for patrol use. But we also have static sites, three static sites that fly missions for calls for service. And they fly out and come back and recharge.
So you beat CMPD to the technology circus, I suppose, here. Why did you choose to do this 7 years ago when this technology was still not what it is today? Why did you start?
There's a huge officer safety component into this, where we can put a drone in places that make it safer for the, especially some of our tactical operators. If you have a barricaded subject or someone that's maybe armed, it's easier to put a drone in there to gather that information versus sending an operator in there to go face-to-face with an individual.
When your department, I'm told, began using these drones for on-scene patrols now, what does on-scene patrolling mean when it comes to a drone?
So that's where if you can envision a armed robbery where we have a suspect's description and he ran to a certain location or ran through the woods, the patrol officer could then get the drone out, deploy the drone, look for that suspect while others are setting up a perimeter for him. And again, imagine in the old days, we would just get on foot, turn a flashlight on, go in the woods and hunt for somebody. Now we can use infrared, try to find a heat signature, and then we can walk our officers into that and say, hey, he's 20 feet to your left, and we can start doing a call out versus like walking on top of him in the past.
There are lots of different drone companies and brands and things like that out there for police departments to use. Correct me if I'm wrong, don't you use something called the Skydio drones? Is that a brand name?
Yes, sir. We used DJI products until July 1st of this year with some ongoing legislation through the federal government with DJI right now. We decided to go to an American-made product, which is Skydio, which also gives us a capability to go further because it actually works off a cell tower versus radio signal.
I watched a video of these things in operation. I don't know whether it was a staged operation or a real operation, but it's remarkable. It's the kind of thing you would see on CSI on television that you think, well, they might be able to do that, but probably not. That's probably TV. But this really is happening. And you're talking about sending a drone up. In this particular video that I watched, they sent this drone up to follow a car that they thought was stolen. The drone followed the car. He parked the car. The suspect got out of the car. The drone followed the suspect. The suspect realized that the drone was following him, hid in the trees. The drone switched to infrared cameras so they could see his heat signature, and then they ultimately talked to him on the drone, and he allegedly surrendered. Is that how you're using it? Is that what you found to be a good use for these things?
That we've not chased cars with them yet. We try to stay away from that just because we have a very tight airspace here and we have to work with the FAA on where we can and cannot fly. So what we do is in situations like that, yes. So our drones also have a microphone attachment to them. So we can call you out. We had it just recently where an individual was hiding in some kudzu. We were able to put the drone above him. He saw the drone and walked him out. And from that point, we discussed starting to use our speaker more often. At least so that there's a, even though we're wearing marked patrol cars, we're in uniform, it's still nice for the public to know law enforcement is there. And if we're giving commands for him to come out, we know he can hear us versus us yelling across a field, maybe.
So the way they portrayed these drones is that they were stationed at certain locations around that particular city that they were demonstrating. They had locations where they launched and where these drones returned. How many of those do you have? How many drones do you have? How long does it take them to get where they need to go? How fast can they fly? How long can they stay up?
So we have three dock sites. So that's the docks where they stay on top of the building. And we generated those based on calls for services within a 2 mile radius. So we're actually in a partnership right now with North Carolina School of the Arts, Wake Forest University, and Forsyth Tech Community College. We have one on each of their sites that we launch from that normally go to about a 2 to 2.5 mile radius. We can have those in the air in less than 60 seconds and be on scene in about 90 seconds in their flight range. We have a little over a 35 mile an hour speed. We typically don't go as fa that fast with a boost, but we can get on scene. Right now, we're averaging over 60% of the time being on scene before officers are. And it can stay in the air approximately about 30 minutes, a few minutes longer, maybe, depending on the wind and the weather. And then we bring them back. Typically, if we're going to be on scene for an extended amount of time, we'll have one of our patrol-led drones. So we have 10 Skydio, 3 in docks, and then 7 that officers will come in, check out, and then take out in the field with them.
Now you mentioned a 2 mile radius. For those not familiar with the lay of the land in Winston-Salem, how much coverage does that give you? Are there areas where you can't use the drones because you can't get there?
Yes, sir. So we have a couple areas now. We're in a contract negotiation trying to get some more docks at this point. We have probably 50% of the city covered, maybe a little bit more. And with our mobile drones and the tactical patrol-led cases, we have those all over the city. So we have over 30 pilots, and that is patrol officers, SWAT officers. They can come in and sign these drones at the beginning of their shift. And if they're needed in another part of town where the DFR drone won't respond, they can respond there and then launch a drone from their patrol cars.
Most of us are familiar with two types of drones: the hobbyist drones that you can go to Best Buy and pick up for yourself, and maybe use for aerial photography or to explore your own plot of land if you're a farmer and you want to make sure the crops are doing well and you don't have to drive the tractor out there. You can use a drone to get there and back with a camera on it. We're also familiar with military-grade drones, which are delivering weapons and used as spy devices, etc. How do the police drones that are in general use throughout the United States differ from those military drones, aside from not carrying high-density weapons?
Well, that's part of it. We don't have anything that attaches, like that we can release an attachment or things of that nature. Everything we have is static. So, speakers, a spotlight, things of that nature. So, we're not deploying anything from the drone. And I would say that the military probably has a better radius of theirs. Again, we can fly ours just as far as we want to based on the cellular service. But again, battery life becomes a hiccup for us. So, we have to bring them back and recharge the batteries, things of that nature. I would say that so Skydio makes a defense product similar to what we're using, but it is definitely has different capabilities, especially the way that it talks to the network.
Do you see a day, do you foresee a day when domestically used, police department used drones could carry some sort of weapons or tear gas or flashbangs that could be launched from the drone to control crowds? Do you foresee that day? And if you do, well, we'll talk about the concerns surrounding that in a second, but do you foresee that?
Not in my lifetime in the police department. That is something that we try to go above and beyond all the expectations. So even if someone else may already be categorizing and using that, we're not there. And I can't see a point. We like to be more hands-on. Deploying weapons from a drone changes the dynamic of how you use drones. Again, you're talking about releasing mechanisms. You're talking about not actually having, I like to say, eyes on. Even though we have the camera there, I would rather a person be able to make those decisions versus trying to do that from miles away. We're not military ready to do that.
Because drones give police a bird's eye view of situations, either static or things that are unfolding and things that are moving, you don't have to send officers on foot or in patrol cars right away to those areas. Have you saved officers' lives? Have you protected officers because of the ability to see this from the sky and then decide where and when to dispatch human beings?
Yes, sir. One of our very first launches last year, we actually had a bank alarm. And for every bank alarm we have, we send two police officers, lights and sirens, to go to it. We were able to get the drone on scene in less than 90 seconds because luckily it was nearby one of our launch sites. And we saw that it was an ATM being worked on. So we were able to reduce both cars to go drive under the normal traffic laws, turned off blue lights and sirens. And we actually canceled one of those cars so he could go answer calls for service elsewhere. So the reduction in manpower across the country with law enforcement, this has been a force multiplier for us. And one of the examples of walking into the wood lines, we actually had that happen. We had a delivery driver that was robbed at gunpoint. The individual fled into the wood line. Our canine had lost the scent. Well, we used the drone and its infrared to be able to walk the officers to them. Again, we know that they're armed and they're in a dark wooded area. So being able to know exactly where they were before we entered the wood line to call them out is a huge lifesaver for us.
How many of these do you have in operation in Winston-Salem, these drones?
We have three dock sites, which are the fixed assets that deploy based on calls for service. And then we have seven that go out with our patrol officers and they deploy those based on their calls.
So that's 10.
Yes, sir. We have 10 Skydio drones currently.
And I have no idea what these things cost, but I know that we are sending out in Charlotte a request for proposal from different companies to purchase their drones or for whatever use, and they may be a slightly different way to use them than you use them. I don't know what the problem, what the plan is, but how what's the cost of this? How do
So
they compare to? Go ahead.
we're upwards over $200,000 a year on the drone program, and we're actually trying to reduce those costs. And the way we were able to fund this is so the drone unit falls under our real-time crime center. That's where we use different intelligence assets. And we look at each of those every year to decide what works and what doesn't work. So as we are ending contracts with other companies, we are using that money instead. That way we're not going back to city council having to ask for more and more and more. We're trying to use the resources that we already have. We've currently hired two civilian pilots. So before we were doing a lot of this as what we call as augmentation. So it's overtime for officers to work these three static sites. Well, now I have two full-time officers or two full-time civilian staff. So that will reduce the overtime cost that we were spending as well.
Michael Knight is a captain in the criminal bureau with the Winston-Salem Police Department. We invited CMP to join us for this conversation weeks ago, and no response came from them, and no response to our questions asking about their use of intent or their intent on how they were going to use these drones. So we'll keep that for a later day. When we come back from the break, we're going to bring Jay Stanley into this conversation along with Jeff Welty. Jay Stanley was with the ACLU. There are privacy concerns and other concerns about use of drones by police departments and other entities. And Jeff Welty will talk about the laws surrounding the use of these drones as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the increasing use of drones In Policing with Michael Knight. He's a captain in the Criminal Intelligence Bureau in the Winston-Salem PD, where they've been using these for about 7 years now. Jay Stanley joins us now. He's a senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. And Jeff Welty's with us. He's a professor in public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Jay, of course, everything that makes drones valuable in policing, the ability to see what cannot be seen, go where people on the ground cannot go, and perhaps even make it safer for people who are innocent bystanders who are caught in the midst of this. It makes it safer for them because they're not dealing with police running around and chasing things. It's all being done from the sky. But there are also privacy concerns about the use of these devices. What are the main concerns?
Yeah, thanks. So I would say that the main concern is that we don't want to see it become a mass surveillance infrastructure. We don't want our skies to darken with so many law enforcement drones that everybody feels like they're being monitored from the moment they leave their house in the morning until they get back at night and just has this sort of sense that there is a police flying robotic video camera hovering over them a lot of the time. And that isn't happening now. We aren't seeing drones used for routine patrol outside of maybe Beverly Hills and maybe New York City, which is something we do not think that law enforcement should do. Right now, we're in very early days. We're seeing drones used for a lot of practical purposes, many of which, you know, are unobjectionable from a civil liberties point of view and probably make a lot of sense. But the questions are, where does this go from here? Because we are in early days. The technology is probably going to get cheaper. The FAA is in the process of removing a lot of the rules around that have restricted drone uses. I mean, the FAA has actually been the reason that, you know, we haven't had this technology 10 years earlier because they've been very strict, very worried about the safety implications. But the FAA is loosening the reins. Right now it's generally illegal to fly a drone beyond the visual line of sight of the operator, called BVLOS.
Wow.
Unless you get special permission, which some police departments have gotten so that they can do these DFR programs. But the FAA is going to open up the skies so that anybody who fits the right conditions can fly beyond the visual line of sight of the operator, which will open up the skies to a lot more drones than we see now. Delivery drones, Amazon drones, UPS drones, and a lot more law enforcement drones.
These drones all carry cameras, and I'm assuming that the cameras are there to allow the operator to operate the drone to see where it's going, so it doesn't run into a tree or doesn't run into the side of a building as it's flying to wherever it needs to go. But that opens up these privacy concerns because they have cameras, and you can see anything. It's not just the suspect that you're trying to suss out, but it's also the fact that it's in the air, and perhaps you can see into the window of a bedroom, of a home, or into a backyard that's private property. Is it being used in any way that has invaded people's personal privacy so far?
So it's very hard to get these stories out. You know, generally, there isn't a lot of visibility into exactly how they're being used. We do know that there have been big privacy invasions with police helicopters, with other aerial surveillance. For example, an NYPD police helicopter was filming a bicycle protest in Manhattan, and footage later released as part of a lawsuit showed that the officers swung the camera over to a rooftop patio where a couple was making love, and film that for an extended period of time with using night vision. So these, you know, abuses like that do happen. And there needs to be checks and balances on those abuses. There are a lot of unanswered legal questions about exactly what the status is if law enforcement is, for example, on the way to a call and they fly over your backyard and they see something that they think is suspicious. Can they, you know, maybe you're in the backyard teaching your kids some wrestling moves because you were a wrestler in your day, and law enforcement thinks that there's, you know, there's a fight or something like that. Are they going to call in a SWAT team? So, I mean, if we just get lots and lots of law enforcement flights, and a lot of these flights, law enforcement will talk about very dramatic situations, bank robberies and the like, but a lot of them are actually about just clearing really, yeah, really daily calls, like, you know, kid bouncing ball against garage. Law enforcement gets a lot of 911 calls like that, and they are kind of a nuisance for, you know, some of them are a nuisance for law enforcement, and they just want to clear them. But when you add it all together, it ends up being a lot of drone flights. And I should say, on a civil liberties point of view, there's also First Amendment issues around drones. One of the primary use cases for drones by law enforcement is to monitor protests and gatherings. And we have heard reports from activists of some police departments, and you know, this is a big country. There are 16,000 police departments. So I'm not talking about any. I'm not talking about Office Captain Knight's department or anything in particular. But it's a big country, and we worry about there being a bell curve. But you know, some departments swooping low over protests is an act of intimidation. And also, if you're out there and you're protesting on a very sensitive subject, a very, very politically charged subject, and there's a police drone overhead, you know, you may feel that your for, you know, your ability to express your First Amendment rights is chilled.
So I want to talk about all of those things because they're all legitimate concerns. But I want to ask you, Captain Knight, when it comes to the Winston-Salem Police Department that have been using these drones now for 7 years, and other departments that you know of, either in North Carolina or around the country, are there restrictions in place? Is there training in place? Are there rules in place within your department to prevent a lot of these normal privacy concerns, like looking in people's upper story windows or into their backyards and misinterpreting what they're seeing? Are there rules in place for that?
Yes, sir. So we are one of three agencies in the state that do have a true BV law to be able to fly beyond visual line of sight. And we do that because we fly from our police department from these dock drones. But all of our drone pilots, whether they're the DFR program or our patrol lead, they have to pass the FAA's course first. Once they pass the drone course to the FAA, then they have to pass our internal course, which is not only a flight course, but we also have trainings in there about ensuring that. One of the things that we decided on the very front end is the gimbal or the camera on the drone. When we fly to a call for service, we do not allow it to be pointed down. It has to be pointed forward only. So, yes, there are peripheral things that you see, but as you can imagine, like in an airplane taking off or landing, we're actually facing out to the call. Now, once we get on the call, of course, we tilt it down to look at the call for service, but that is just one of the small things that we did on the front end. And the calls for service, we actually have a program called Live 911. So our drone operators are listening to that and they listen to those calls for service. And we don't have, not saying we wouldn't ever in the future, but we definitely don't have the manpower now to go to all of those smaller calls. We're typically going to what we call as a code one call, which is emergency response, weapons calls, or our high risk missing persons, whether that's juveniles or elderly with cognitive issues. So some of that is you have to remember. I can see other agencies that may have more manpower and more drones flying going to some of those smaller calls. At this point, the WSPD just, we're only going to those calls where we really believe that drone is going to help the officer make better decisions once they get on scene.
So Jeff Welty's with us. He is a professor of public law and government at UNC School of Government in Chapel Hill. The regulations are one thing, laws are another. Departmental regulations are one thing, laws are another. And as we all know, the government is typically behind the curve when it comes to the use of technology. They're a little behind where technology is. So when it comes to these kinds of legal concerns, has the law kept up with the technology, Jeff?
That's a great question, and you're right that there's a frequent dynamic of law enforcement pursuant to their public safety mission, seeking out and taking advantage of new technologies, and then it taking a while for the legislatures and the courts to find the appropriate balance of the advantages of the new technologies versus the privacy and other risks that they entail. And we could talk at length about the history of that, but I do think with regard to drones, it's relatively early days for this technology. The vast majority of states, including North Carolina, have some form of state law on the books that limits law enforcement use of drones. Whether those laws are adequate and how they'll be interpreted in the courts and how they're applied by agencies starting drone programs, those are all questions that we haven't fully answered in North Carolina.
Just as police body camera footage has become an important tool in civilian monitoring of policing, drone camera footage is also adding to that. In Chula Vista, which is in California, a local newspaper filed a lawsuit seeking to force police to release drone video footage for 1 month in 2021 over concerns that police could be infringing on people's privacy. Can footage like that be successfully requested under the laws in North Carolina, Jeff?
It could be, potentially. We have a specific state statute that governs video and audio recordings in the custody of law enforcement agencies. Those requests generally have to go through a court process, but it's far from unheard of for courts to grant release when there's some indication of a public interest or public purpose that would support releasing them. So, short answer, yes, I think so. But also, your question gets to the question of how long are agencies retaining that footage, and other questions that the state statute that we have doesn't specifically address or mandate. So there's a lot of agency discretion in what they keep, but there is a state law that would allow media members, advocacy groups, and members of the public potentially to get access to the footage in appropriate circumstances.
Michael, how long does your department keep the footage?
It isn't a criminal nature state in our system. We have some videos that are considered non-police related that can go out within 90 days, but typically we don't. So we've gone to a program called evidence.com, which is through Axon, and we save everything. We have unlimited data storage. So just like our interview rooms for our detectives downstairs, all of those videos fall under that state statute, just like the drone video does. So I can tell you that our drone video is still there. You know, I mean, we keep it not only for training purposes, but for court purposes as well.
So Jay, that seems to open up a can of worms to me. If you've got police departments like Winston-Salem saving everything forever on a server someplace, does that increase the privacy concerns of individuals who have been caught on this video, innocent or not?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it does. The good privacy practice from our point of view is to retain video for a certain period of time and then flush it. If it's not, you know, evidence, if it's evidentiary, then it should be treated like all other evidence. But if it's non-evidentiary video, there is no reason to keep it. And remember, video cameras today are not like video cameras, you know, in the Obama administration. We now have AI. And so yeah. Video, large pools of stored video can be searched in ways that used to be too expensive because it required a human. So you can do a search, you know, in a large ocean of data, find me an Asian man wearing a plaid shirt and things like that. Find me any video in which a marijuana plant appears, things like that, and do sort of dragnets through video pools.
Yeah, so you have AI, and also as time goes on, we'll have better facial recognition, so you can identify people probably in these shots, even in crowd shots. Someone mentioned the First Amendment, the possible problems with the First Amendment with the use of these drones. But Jeff, the Fourth Amendment protects the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures without a warrant and without probable cause. There is a state law on our books that says law enforcement cannot use drones without a warrant to conduct surveillance on private property. How does the use of drones potentially jeopardize any existing protections provided by the Fourth Amendment?
Great question. And I'll answer it by telling a little bit about another police technology that is closely related, which is a number of years ago, the city of Baltimore contracted with a private vendor to fly an airplane over the city 12 hours a day during daylight hours and to record via camera essentially the entire city. And that program was challenged in court as a violation of the Fourth Amendment, as an unreasonable search because it allowed essentially total surveillance of everyone in the city of Baltimore during all daylight hours. And after years of litigation, a federal court ruled that that was an unreasonable search that violated the Fourth Amendment. Now, Jay pointed out, we're not at total surveillance with police use of drones. They're being used in limited circumstances for particular purposes. But I think the question that he raised appropriately is, what is the point where the number of drones and their capacity does start to raise Fourth Amendment concerns? And I think as we think about that question, we need to think not just about drones, but about other technologies that law enforcement uses too, like license plate readers, like pole mounted cameras, right? There is a network of law enforcement surveillance technologies, and the challenge for the courts in the future is to think about that network as a whole instead of just as a set of individual parts.
Well, and just to build on that, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You know, there is this idea of, you know, do you have reasonable expectation of privacy in public? And of course, in some sense, you don't. If you're in public, you can see people and they can see you. But the courts are finding that if you are followed across space and time, as you know, you're followed as you move around a city or a town or a county, as you're followed over many, many hours and days, that even if you are in public the whole time, does begin to implement, you know, to raise Fourth Amendment issues. And that's something that can be done with license plate readers, or potentially in the future, if there are enough of them,
Yeah.
drones.
I want to talk some more about that because that is a, I think, a legitimate concern. But Jeff, if police do not have a warrant to search your property, they cannot come in and conduct a search. That would be illegal. But drones have cameras that can see through windows. They have infrared cameras. They can see through obstructions like walls and roof lines. They can see the heat signatures of people and where they are in a particular structure. If police, in the course of using a drone for one purpose, happen to see something suspicious or illegal, can they use what they find in that to either seek a warrant or to prosecute those people or go into a structure and search?
They potentially could. And your question raises lots of Fourth Amendment questions that we could dig into separately. So I'm going to set the infrared technology aside because there's sort of a whole separate set of cases there. But as far as using aerial tools that might capture the privacies of a home, the United States Supreme Court has generally said that it's not a search. It's not something courts need to be concerned about if law enforcement briefly flies an airplane over your property and photographs it, or flies a helicopter over your property and photographs it. And the question that courts are just starting to think about with drones is whether drones are any different than that, because they may fly at a lower altitude, they may be silent and so less noticeable. We don't have cases yet in North Carolina on that point, but I think that's where. That's kind of where the future of this issue is. And I think it connects as well to the warrant question. Our state law requires law enforcement to have a warrant to conduct surveillance with a drone, but it doesn't define what surveillance is. And I think reasonable minds might differ about whether, for example, a single overflight of a property looking for a stolen car is or isn't surveillance.
Surveillance is a key concern, and we're going to come back and talk about that because we don't want to live in a constantly surveilled society because that smacks of Big Brother, of authoritarianism. We're coming right back. Michael Knight is here from Winston-Salem PD, Jay Stanley from the ACLU, and Jeff Welty from the UNC School of Government at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. Their small classes offer a supportive learning environment where middle schoolers can develop curiosity and essential skills like critical thinking, collaboration, and problem solving. Details at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the increasing use by police departments around the area, around the country, around the state of drones. CMPD is looking into this, into the use of these drones, and we invited them to join us for this conversation weeks ago. They received no response, and we've received no response to questions asking for a statement on the intent of how they intend to use these drones should they start. But we're here with Michael Knight. He's using them because he's a captain with the Criminal Intelligence Bureau at Winston-Salem PD. They've been using these for about 7 years. Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project, and Jeff Welty, a professor in public law and government at UNC School of Government. Before we talk about surveillance, Jeff, I want to go back up for just a couple of seconds, because when it comes to police body cam and the footage that they contain, I believe it is a state law that you have to go to a judge and ask that judge if he will allow for that footage to be released to the media, to the public, to defense attorneys, etc. Is that also the case with drone footage?
Yes, it's the very same law that applies to body cam footage. It applies to all recordings, audio or video, held by law enforcement agencies. So in almost all cases, somebody who wants to look at drone footage would need to go to a judge.
So under state law, it is, I think you said this in the last segment, it's illegal to conduct surveillance of a person or a dwelling without the person's consent, nor can you conduct surveillance on private property without that consent. But there is law enforcement exceptions as well. among them, the right of law enforcement to surveil an area that is within the law enforcement officer's plain view. In other words, if that officer is sitting in his patrol car and he looks across a field and he can see that marijuana is being grown on the other side of the corn, he can send in a drone to make sure, because he can see it. So if an officer is sitting in his car and can see a field of marijuana and can legally dispatch a drone to get a better look, is that law being followed by police departments?
I think in the example you gave, the answer is yes. If the officer can see it with their naked eye and the drone just gives them a little bit of a better view in the same way that binoculars would, I think that's okay under the law.
So if it's okay for an officer to see something illegal and then act upon what he sees, why wouldn't you want a drone, which perhaps can see more than the officer because it's getting a bird's eye view, to be able to telegraph that back to the officer so that he can then act upon that illegal activity? Why wouldn't you want that to be the case?
I think Captain Knight explained that you would want that. It's a big advantage to be able to have a little bit of a different perspective, or to be able to have a drone go where the officer can't immediately go. And to me, those aren't the situations where there are serious privacy questions, because the officer can already see it. So that's not the part of our law that I think...
Well, that raises the most questions. My question is what the officer cannot see. It's still against, if something is still against the law, but the officer is in a position where they can't see it, but the drone can, why wouldn't you want to be able to use that drone as an extra set of eyes? Because there is a police officer on the other end of the drone.
Yeah, if you're talking about stuff that the officer can't see, then our law mostly would classify that as surveillance and would require a search warrant to do it. So you still might want it. It still might be beneficial, but you'd need to establish probable cause that something nefarious is going on in order to be able to fly your drone over there to see it.
Is this a point of frustration for police departments, Michael? I mean, if you're out there to try to prevent laws from being broken and you can only use these drones for certain areas and up to a certain point, do you find that frustrating?
Actually, no, sir, I don't. It's been a huge tool for us. A prime example is when we first started using drones, there was still some misunderstanding. So we had to actually train our patrol officers when we can and can't go out. And one of those was a stolen car behind a wooden fence. They wanted us to put a drone up and check for that. I'm like, well, you can't do that. And just like Jeff was saying, if you can't see with your naked eye, you're going to need a search warrant. You need more than that. Would it be great for us to be able to follow everybody? I don't think so. Because again, I live in a county and I live on a farm, and I don't want drones over me if there's no reason. So that's why we are very call specific. We don't do random flights. We don't just fly around to see what's going on. We are only call driven. So if a call for service has been initiated, that's when we're deploying our drones.
So Jay, there are cameras everywhere now. There are cameras in stores, in shopping malls. There are cameras outside of buildings. There are traffic light cameras. There are license plate cameras. All can be or are being used by law enforcement. Some are privately owned and operated, but the ACLU seems to be very concerned about drones being used as first responders because, to quote an article that you wrote a few years ago, quote, a world where flying robotic police cameras constantly crisscross our skies is one we have never seen before. It is a bit big brotherish, but given the ubiquity of security cameras and all the cameras that I mentioned, how is this different?
It's a fair question. And first of all, we really don't like the idea of, you know, government or police cameras, still cameras, poll cameras, blanketing cities either. but I think it is different when you look at an aerial moving camera. It can follow people and view people across much wider areas, as in the Baltimore case that Jeff mentioned. It can follow people, and you know that bird's eye view is important. We have, as human beings, an intuitive sense of, and you know, as social beings, we are constantly monitoring, like, how are we appearing to those around us? Who is watching us right now and who isn't? And if you have a new technology that really violates that intuitive sense of when you're being when you're being watched and when you're not, it can really make people feel as though they're constantly under observation, and that's a feeling of really not being free.
There are people who feel like that, but there are also people, and we learned this after 9/11, that if you want to do something that keeps me safe, do it.
It's true. There are many people who would sacrifice their liberty for a little, at least illusory safety, I think. But I think that what I'm seeing is that across the political spectrum, both people on the left and a lot of people on the right are deeply concerned about this kind of surveillance. And I think, you know, what I see across the country is that police departments are aware of that, and they're being very careful in how they unroll these technologies. But we're in early days, and if once they become normalized, you are going to see a certain proportion of police departments push to new areas, push to use them in the ways you were describing about, you know, putting them on patrol in neighborhoods where they may have a lot of crime, so that people in those neighborhoods do feel like they're constantly under surveillance. And using AI to screen through video, and some departments are going to want to weaponize these.
We send patrol cars, at least we do in Charlotte, we send patrol cars out at a more frequent interval in neighborhoods that are known to be crime prone than we do in other areas of Charlotte. How is this different? How is putting drones up in those areas to keep people safe, to keep their property safe, to keep drug deals down, any different than sending out frequent patrols or having more officers on foot walking through those neighborhoods? How is it different?
It's a fair question. The thing about putting physical officers into a city or into an area is that there are natural inborn limits on how much that can take place. Human beings are expensive. There's only so many of them that any police department is going to deploy. Whereas, you know, would you want to have, even in a high crime area, or if you lived in that area, would you want to have four police officers standing on every block 24/7 recording information about what you're doing? That nobody's going to pay enough police officers to do that, but we will and are increasingly able to do that with the technological equivalent, license plate readers, drones. And so the concern is that we're going to sleepwalk with that if we don't set, you know, checks and balances and limits on these technologies into a world where that is the way we live.
What is the police department's opinion of this? I mean, you're charged with protecting us to keep us safe, for arresting the bad guys, etc. This is a tool, not just like a patrol car. What's your opinion on this?
I enjoy the technology, but I also don't want to overstep the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment. Like, there are guidelines in place for a reason. And that is one of the things we focus on. So we have monthly training for all of our pilots. And that's one of the things we focus on, is not only the new FAA laws that come out frequently, but also making sure that we're doing this the right way. And again, for us, we're very fortunate that we're call driven. So we're not just out doing a foot patrol, if you will, with a drone. We are call driven. And drone goes to the call, the gimbal's up, we monitor what's going on at the scene. When the drone comes back, the gimbal goes forward again. So we're not just recording everything that we're flying over. So as much as I love the technology, I also love my civil rights. And I want to make sure that I'm not stepping on somebody else's at the same time.
So, Jeff, if we take Mike, well, you wanted to join that conversation. You wanted to say something before I ask you this question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think you've really hit on the very different intuitions that people have about this kind of technology. There's some group of people that says, my life's not exciting, there's nothing to see, if this helps promote public safety, let's do it. And there's a group of people who are very concerned about, you know, kind of the Orwellian aspect of it. And the interesting thing is that to the extent we have court opinions in this emerging area, the courts are really divided about it too. Like in the Baltimore case that I talked about, it was a very narrowly divided court. And you can see judges grappling with these very same questions about how beneficial the technology is and how to balance the benefits with privacy concerns. So this show's spot on, and it's something that courts are dealing with too.
So let's just say that Captain Knight here from Winston-Salem PD is one of the good guys, and that their department are the good guys, and that they are doing precisely what they should do and using this precisely the way the law prescribes it to be used, and they're doing it diligently, and they're not making mistakes. But we all know that there are bad actors in every line of work and in every department. And we've seen legendary bad actors with regard to police departments or sheriff's departments in certain parts of the country over time. Do we know for a fact, and are there laws in place that work to prevent what Jay has is concerned about? That is mission creep. Using these little bit more because we kind of need to here, Jeff. Are there laws to prevent that from happening?
Well, one interesting aspect of North Carolina's law about drones is that it provides for what's called a private cause of action. If you're unlawfully surveilled under the law, you can sue and get $5,000 in damages for each incident of surveillance. So there's an attempt to have some teeth in the checks and balances. On the question of mission creep, though, right, I think that's a really important question. And the law doesn't regulate the number of drones an agency can deploy or how long they can be up for. Some of those questions might get addressed in the process of applying for warrants if an agency is doing that to conduct surveillance. But some of these big picture questions, maybe those aren't fully captured by the law that we have. And those are issues that as time evolves and we see how technologies combine and work together, that legislatures and courts may need to tackle.
Jay, I think you mentioned this, and I know you've written about this, the situation in Beverly Hills, California, where drone use has expanded. What's happening in Beverly Hills, it became the first city in the nation to begin using drones for routine patrols. Why is that any more concerning, to have a drone patrolling the streets of high-dollar neighborhoods like Beverly Hills, than it is to have police cars cruising through it to make sure people aren't smashing and banging at Tiffany's and other stores on Rodeo Drive?
Yeah, just because it is the next step in that mission creep that we fear we're going to see, where you go from drones as first responders responding to specific calls, being deployed for specific purposes, you know, spot deployments, to putting them up just to watch everybody just in case somebody does something. And our view is that in this country, the government shouldn't be looking over your shoulder, literally or figuratively, if it doesn't have individualized suspicion that you're involved in wrongdoing.
There are those who think, Jeff, that the United States is creeping ever so slowly toward, maybe quickly, toward autocracy. And we know that in autocratic regimes, surveillance is one of the key things that they use. The federal government, however, has for years had satellites that allegedly can read the date on a dime in a gutter from outer space. Some believe that there's very little difference between that and the use of cameras on every street corner, or the use of helicopters that by police with cameras attached, or these drones. Are we already living in a surveilled society?
Maybe different people might answer that question differently. We are definitely living in a more surveilled society than we ever have. And that's not just a result of government uses of technology, right? The private sector has a wealth of data about individual locations, habits, preferences, and activities. And so any discussion of balancing privacy and security increasingly needs to take account not only of what government can do, but also of what private entities can do.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Michael, in your opinion, as somebody with the Winston-Salem PD, have the use of drones made people, communities, safer? Have they made police work safer?
Yes, sir. I believe 100% that we have made everything safer, from our response times to all. We always say a better informed officer makes better decisions. So if the drone gets there first and it can tell us what's truly happening there versus someone's in a state of chaos calling 911, then that's the information that we really want.
And do you think, Jeff, that the law is keeping up? I know I asked you a similar question earlier in this program, but as these drones become more capable and are used more frequently and more widespread, are the laws keeping up?
I don't think North Carolina's behind. I think we're where other states are in terms of regulating drones and balancing the privacy interests against law enforcement efficacy. I do think there are a lot of unanswered questions that over the next few years, courts will need to wrestle with about length of deployment, height of overflight, different circumstances, and whether they constitute surveillance. So there's a lot of work to be done. I don't think we're behind.
Jay, I have about 30 seconds. What recommendations or admonitions would the ACLU put on all of this?
We would recommend that communities just think about this and take a close look at it and put in place rules that are not just sort of the police department guidelines that can be changed on a dime, but rules that set limits on how drones are used, so that we don't backslide into a world where they are overused to an extent that we don't want, that they are not subject to abuse.
As we said, CMPD is considering the use of these. They have calls for proposals out from various companies to buy them. CMPD was invited to join. They did not return our call, nor did they answer any of the questions we had about their intent or their protocols that are pending. Michael Knight, captain with Winston-Salem PD, Jay Stanley with the ACLU, Jeff Welty with the UNC School of Government. Thank you all three for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.